and welcome to Ending Physician Overwhelm. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Mello. I'm a family and obesity medicine physician, as well as a certified life coach for physicians. In this podcast, we talk about how the learned habits of people-pleasing, perfectionism, and a lack of boundaries show up in our lives and how they contribute to burnout, exhaustion, and overwhelm. The healthcare system is broken, my friends, but let's not wait for it to be fixed in order to feel better. Well, hello and welcome to another special guest episode. Today, I'm here with my friend, Dr. Erica Bove. Dr. Bove is a double board certified OBGYN and reproductive endocrinologist who specializes in infertility. And I'm so glad that we get to have a chance to chat today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's so wonderful to be here, Dr. Mello. And I've been following you for so long and your podcast, and to be a guest, it's so exciting for me. Thank you for having me.
Oh, well, thanks for that. All right. So tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of a little bit more about who you are, where you're speaking to us from, and then we'll jump into your story.
Sure. So my name is Dr. Erica Bove. I'm originally from Vermont, and actually I'm sitting in Vermont right now at the University of Vermont because I am a faculty here. And so this whole loop of training has brought me many other places, but now I am in what I consider to be my home. And I'm a physician and a life coach. And so I do both doctoring in terms of helping people get pregnant and dealing with complex reproductive endocrinology issues. And then I also, my other hat is that I have a practice, a coaching practice for female professionals who are on the fertility journey, and I support them through one-on-one coaching and group coaching endeavors.
Yeah, which is so important because we need both the science part as well as the necessary sort of emotional handholding and exploration that is a part of the infertility journey. So we'll talk more about that, but let's start off by hearing a little bit more about you and your story. We always kind of start the conversation sharing stories about burnout and overwhelm that we've experienced, really in order to normalize that this is unfortunately an occupational hazard that nearly all of us face in some vein. So share with us kind of your story and when you realized that things were really a struggle.
Absolutely. And I think if I were to diagram this out, there would definitely be like peaks and valleys for sure. Mm-hmm. I think one thing that's really pertinent is that I think we normalize burnout in training. And so as I think about all the times that I realized I was burned out, some of them were in training, but I thought there was nothing I could do about it. So I think that's really pertinent. I actually went to medical school to be a psychiatrist, which is kind of a fun twist. And then I found OBGYN and I love working with my hands and I love women's health. And so I did take a sharp turn in a different direction and decided to pursue that. I had a lot of people who asked me at that time, are you sure?
Seems like it's normally the other direction, right? I want to be a surgeon, then I decide to be a psychiatrist. But that's my total impression.
Yeah. And I mean, people said this out of love. And I heard, if you can't see yourself doing anything else, then do OBGYN. But if there's anything else that you think could be give you a comparable, meaningful life, then do that other thing. And I was like,
no pressure.
I was young and somewhat naive. And I'm like, yeah, I got it. I'm tough. I run marathons. We do hard things, like all of that. So I said, I'm going to do a residency in OBGYN. I matched where I wanted to at Columbia in New York City, which was very exciting at the time. And then I was going from the University of Vermont, where I was a medical student, which I worked very hard. It was demanding, but the culture is very friendly here. You know, it's rural. Mm-hmm. People are kind. And I had sort of personal reasons for wanting to be in New York City, but I don't think I quite estimated what that leap was going to be in terms of New York City culture. I also didn't speak Spanish, which was interesting because like over half my patients spoke Spanish. So I really learned Spanish very quickly, OBGYN Spanish. But just on a very like cultural level, the fact that you have to like be assertive, super assertive, and even aggressive for patient care, the fact that there's like very little ancillary support. So you like do all the blood draws yourself. I mean, even still, you have to negotiate to find a wheelchair for somebody if they, you know, need it. It's just, you don't have what you need. And so that leap, and then all the time, I think the people who have chosen to practice there, like all the attendings, they're just so used to it that they're very hardened as well. Most of them, not all of them. So that leap was really hard. And then as I was starting my intern year, well, shortly before that, my then mother-in-law was diagnosed with metastatic melanoma. And so I think sometimes it's the confluence of things like the culture change and the residency and a sick family member and all those things that it was pretty hard. And so I actually had thought about leaving OBGYN at that point. I was an intern. I was on nights. I would go home. I would research other programs that I could switch to. I thought about PM&R in terms of switching. And then I was like, you know what? I think there's enough things that I would really miss about women's health. But I think that was my first inkling. This is not working. Something is really broken here. And I don't know how to fix it. I think maybe it's a different specialty, right? And at that point, I was the breadwinner in my marriage. And I had practical reasons I needed to stay. Otherwise, I think I would have tailed out. But I was like, I'm going to find a way to make this work. And so I pressed on. I just sort of stayed true to my values of always protecting my patients and my junior residents. And I got more respect. I kind of figured out how to be. Part of that, incidentally, did involve like turning off my emotions temporarily in terms of being more of a warrior at work and some alterations that I actually do regret to this day. You know, I think it took me a long time to come back from that. But then I got pregnant my third year of residency, and that was a bright light. Like, for some people, that would add to the stress. But for me, it was like something very hopeful that helped me get through the rest of my residency. And by that point, I'd realized I really did want to do fertility medicine. And I was, you know, had done some research, I was interviewing, and those were all kind of like positive things. So I think sometimes when there's a stressor, if we can temper it with some of the positive things, that can get us through temporarily, right? So that's what happened. I matched at the University of Michigan, which is where I wanted to go again. I was very grateful. And then we moved out to Michigan, even farther from family support, and I started my fellowship. I got pregnant pretty quickly my first year, breastfeeding child. You know, I'm an OBGYN, I know how these things work. And my second son was a lovely surprise. I adore him. And I will also say, having a husband at the time who was a resident and being a fellow myself with no family, having a toddler, being pregnant, I mean, that was very difficult. So I think it was like my second year of fellowship when I emerged and I was like, something is really wrong here. This is a wound that is festering. It is open. It is not healing well. And I hope that getting through training makes a difference, but I don't know if it will. That was really my first inkling of like, and I think I cried for the first time in 6 years. I was like, something is really wrong here. But I think I still held out the hope that finishing training would solve some of the problems.
We're gonna come out of this period of hardship, right? Yeah. And then things will magically be sunny, which in some part is the story we were sold.
Yes. It's the carrot. Right?
Then there's this sense too of this finiteness. If I just harden up, right, to get through this time period, then I'll emerge and everything will be fine, and I'll feel rested, and I'll know how to relax, and everything. I'll know how to have my feelings. I'll be fine. I'll be great. Okay.
Yes. So then what I became happened? An attending, and I decided to stay at the University of Michigan. I bought like the nice big house. My then husband got his sort of adult job doing family medicine. And I was like, okay, here we go. We have more resources now. We have two children. It's going to be great. And much to my surprise, actually things got acutely worse once I became an attending. And that was so crushing because I had been on this journey since medical school. 7 years later, I'm like, I'm finally at the end of my training. And then I realized, you know, my marital problems are not getting better. They're getting worse. We had to deal with some really tough things in the marriage. We entered into marriage counseling, and then it became clear that we needed to get divorced. So that was really hard because that wasn't my strong plan A, as I like to say. And it was really just hard to navigate having two kids, being in a state where I had no family support. And then what do I do? So 15 months later, we navigated a move to the East Coast, which is to this day is still a miracle. My family is in Vermont. And then I was like, okay, this is the brass ring job. Like, it's private practice. It's going to be more manageable. I have more autonomy. The dust has settled from the divorce. Like, here we go. Now is the time that things are going to get better, right? Like, and I will tell you, despite my best efforts, like I had, you know, micromanaged my schedule to leave at a certain time. I had the nanny. I had my nurses uptrained, my PAs, my NPs. I was doing every single thing I knew to thrive. Mm-hmm. And my 10-year-old asked me, because now here I are, like I had him in residency. I'm like 10 years later. He said to me, he said, Mommy, where are you? And I said, what do you mean, buddy? I'm right here. We were at the dinner table. And he said, Mommy, you're here, but you're not here. And so I think I needed that like external view of my child being like, you are trying so hard to be present. And despite your best efforts, you are not present. And that was like my come to Jesus moment where I was like, okay, we really need to make some changes here because this finally is not acceptable to me. Like I could put up with all the other stuff, but my number one priority in my life is to be, you know, a mom and fully present to my kids. And when that wasn't happening, despite all the external changes I was trying to make, I was like, something has got to change. And so that was kind of my real moment when I was like, no more, we've got to figure this out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of the reality that I think none of us can really understand until we have kids, kind of all the stuff that can come up reflected from them, our stuff reflected off of them to us. Perfectionism, hearing that we think we're doing it all right, but we're not present, right? We're not here in the way that they need us to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Part of the struggle for sure. Okay. So multiple sort of peaks and valleys as you described, and we sort of get to this point where we realize, okay, it is not okay that my 10-year-old feels like I'm not present. What happened at that point? What did you choose to do?
Yeah. So at that point, my intuition does guide me and sometimes I ignore it, but when I actually listen, it tells me the right thing to do. So at that point I was already enrolled in the life coach school because through some of my other coaching work with Dr. Kavitha Sun, I realized I wanted to be a life coach. I didn't know why I was doing it. I think I knew that my job wasn't really going to be a long-term solution. Something was really missing in clinical medicine. And I just got this inkling to sign up for this program. So I was in the program at the time when my son said that. And around the same time, my small group member was a naturopath in Australia who runs a fertility practice in Australia. And she said to me, she's like, I know you're not happy in your job and we really need people to coach our patients. Would you like to work for us part-time? I think that could be a win-win. And that was the first crack in the system where I was like, maybe I'm not wedded to clinical medicine to make my income. Mm-hmm. Maybe I can make money other ways. And so that was a beautiful realization. I mean, we went through conversations and contracts, and I think given the time change, it would have been really hard to sustain, but we did some projects together that were very fun. And that's when my mind started to open up to be like, you know what? I wonder, maybe I could start a coaching practice and make income that way. Maybe I don't need to do this forever. And I will also say as a side note, in my work in fertility, basically to do full spectrum REI, you need an IVF lab. And IVF labs cost like millions of dollars to build. And so because of my divorce and being geographically limited, I think sometimes we have these limiting beliefs that tell us we're stuck. Absolutely. And part of my stuckness was like, oh, I'm divorced. I have to work in Albany, New York. This is my trajectory, at least until my kids are out of high school. And it's just what I realized is it's just not that way. So I finished my coaching certification. I started getting ideas about maybe being a coach for people with infertility. And at that point, Kavitha had asked me to be her head coach, actually, which was had a lot of very appealing features to it. And so I deliberated between the two and I did decide to be her head coach. But I had already set up a lot of things for my own coaching practice, which is helpful because it's almost like a graph, like a lot of things overlapped to make this happen, guided by intuition. Yeah. So I told Kavitha, I said, I'd love to be your head coach. At the same time, I'd love to take some private clients. And she was totally understanding. We don't really have overlap in terms of clients. And so I realized as I was coaching these women, I was like, this is, I love the relationship coaching, but like the fertility coaching is really what I'm meant to do. Like this is my ninja skill. This is what I care about so much. Like, I really think I need to go in this direction. And so Kavitha and I had a conversation. We made transition plans for all the clients. And that was after about a year of being her head coach, which, oh my goodness, Dr. Mello, I learned so much in that role. And now I've launched my own fertility coaching practice for women professionals with infertility. And that's just been so exciting for me. So that's, you know, I feel like I have autonomy. I have a lot of time freedom. And around that time too, that job where I said I wasn't really like things were not working out, I actually resigned from that practice. And didn't have a plan. That's important. I didn't actually know what I was going to do, but I just trusted it was going to work out. And this division director at the University of Vermont said, we really need clinical people. Why don't you come and work with us when you don't have your children for a few days a month and see how that goes? And so this is this very out of the box thing that I didn't even know existed, but they had a need and I wanted to keep up my skills and keep practicing some clinical medicine. And that's grown to the point where now I work here 2 weeks out of the month, and now we're negotiating a more permanent position.
Yeah. Well, I want to pick up on a few things that you said there. One that we'll start with is kind of that intuition, because for so many people in medicine, that intuition gets sort of squished out of us. Sometimes we might have a concern and we're students or residents, right? And someone tells us, no, you're wrong. Like, you can't just go off faith or intuition. And then sometimes something terrible happens that we sort of predicted. But talk to us a little bit about kind of listening to the intuition.
Yes.
Because again, I think so many of us really struggle with that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's tricky because in our work, we are taught to be super analytical and we are supposed to look at all the data and think about algorithms, and it's like very problem solution. And there's like the right way forward, right? And it's based, it's a very cerebral process.
Yes. I think here's your chart. When we go down and we check the boxes, yes or no. And
yes. Yeah. And there's like a right answer to everything. You just got to figure it out cognitively. But I think sometimes that our bodies have wisdom, and we are not taught as physicians how to drop into our bodies and to tune into how we feel, how a certain maybe clinical situation feels in our body, or how the next right thing for us feels in our body as we start to sort of actually envision it and work it out. And our bodies have wisdom too. It's just not that same cerebral process. It's more like an inner knowing. It's like that still small voice that we talk about, right? And we have to slow down and we have to get quiet to hear it. And sometimes it doesn't tell us what we want or think should happen, right? For me, stop, even like the idea that I would cut back with clinical medicine and be a coach, my brain offered me all sorts of things like, well, then you're not a doctor. And then what are other people going to think about you?
All these things that you've done, all this time, you're just
one of those precious REI spots. Somebody else would have looked for that. And it's so funny because I think I can only be the coach I am because of my extensive training and my like experience in the fertility world. But the brain, it offers so many things. And so I think it's like dropping into the body and listening and sitting with it over time and having courage to listen to that voice. And I think the first step is always realizing when something is off kilter, because sometimes we don't necessarily know what that next right thing is. But the first step is to tune in. And I do like feelings check-ins. Like, I try to do them multiple times a day because I sometimes ignore my feelings. And I'm like, does this feel right? Or does something about this not feel right? And it's in that not feel right that then I get more curious. And I'm like, okay, well, then what about this doesn't feel right? And what can we do about it? So I think that's the first step. And then going from there.
I think that's so important. And so I'm just going to highlight that again for anyone who is out there listening, of dropping into your body and tuning into your emotions and asking yourself questions with curiosity and kindness of, why does this feel this way? Because again, I think that's often been pushed out of us. And I think so many of us struggle to pause and notice our emotions, especially if we're overwhelmed, if we're burned out. All of our emotions can feel really hard. They can feel fully on that negative sort of sphere. And as you and I know from our training, right, with the Life Coach School, like, the goal is not that we never have negative emotions, but the goal is that we have our positive and our negative and are about 50-50, and we feel all of them, right? We tune into them. We're aware of them, but we're not the victim of them.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's data. I mean, we can think about our thoughts and our feelings as data. You're like, oh, that's so interesting.
Squishy data.
What did you say?
It's squishy data, right?
Yeah, for sure.
It's hard numbers, or we can't see it on the dial, right? We can have our wheel of emotions, right? But your body and you tuning in helps determine, like, where are you on that wheel, and not some metric that we can determine. We can't do a blood test to see.
Yes.
Well, I'm 80% angry.
And I will say, one of the themes of your work is perfectionism and people pleasing. And I think that gets us into trouble, because if I say to myself, this is what feels really right to me, but I don't know if so-and-so would approve of that. And I want them, say it's like a boss or a colleague, I want them to think of me this way. Then we sort of like undermine the intuition. And that's when we start to then twist ourselves to then be more like think I call it like appointing them instead of appointing ourselves. We're disappointing ourselves to appoint them to this level. So we have to be really mindful of when we're making decisions to please other people and when we're making decisions based on what's right for us and our families.
Yeah. Well, I think there's something here too that's common in our stories, which is that I think we both had contemplated fully leaving medicine and jumping 100% into coaching. And ultimately, both of us did not do that. But trying to figure out, what is this different path? How can I do some medicine, but maybe in a way that I hadn't thought about before? But also, how do I do coaching, which lights me up, which is something that really calls to me? Because I think, you know, as you were sort of alluding to, so often we think I have to keep working primarily as a physician. And that means I can only work in these ways. I have to look for an advertised job that has all the check boxes. But so often our opportunities are, I don't know, they're a little bit more free flowing than that, right? So you were able to connect with this job that is part-time, that is flexible. They need you. And it supplements the income, right, to allow you to build something that you want.
Yes, that's exactly it. Yeah. And I think, and not every situation is the same, but there's four of us in this division right now, and everyone is a mom. Everyone is a fertility specialist. We all love what we do. And we also mm-hmm. understand that there are times, things that come up, like illness of a family member, or for my children, when I ask them, like, okay, I'm thinking about a job in another state. I don't stop being a mom when I don't have my kids, right? Because I have my kids every other week. And then my kids said, Mom, just don't miss the drama performances or those school concerts. That's what we care about the most. And so I took that as data. At least at this moment in time, that's what's important to my kids, is that I show up for those things. And so I brought that to mm-hmm. my team. And I said, I can only be here when I don't have my kids. And I need to be able to make it for the drama and the concerts, and they've honored it, which is really fantastic.
Yeah. And finding a group that gets it, right, which is a challenge. That's so wonderful to hear. And I think again, that's an example of something that people need to hear, of you may only be seeing opportunities out there that are very rigid, that are very bureaucratic, that are very inflexible. That's not all that exists. But you probably didn't stumble into this, right? Like, you weren't looking at a job board somewhere and you found that they had written down, well, we're looking for someone to cover some shifts a few times a month. That's not where it is, right? It's in our relationships, our connections. It's asking people. And this was a group that you were connected to, correct?
I was connected to them just because it's a small community and I had done medical school here. There wasn't anything. I called my division director a week before I met with my bosses for my other job. And I said, we're going to sit down next week and my gut says it's not going to go well. And I don't think it's a long-term relationship. We had started to talk about partnership and I kind of got that almost like when you're like, I don't think I should marry this person. It was like, I don't think this partner, this is like going to be another bad marriage. Like, I don't want to do that to myself. So then I called her and she's, I think we can work something out. And so I think part of it is that what I'm so thankful about is that I didn't completely disavow my love of medicine. And I tuned into it because I really do love taking care of patients. And I think to kind of throw it all out would have been to reject that, to almost split off that part of myself. And it would have been more like clean cut, but I did put in all this time of training. I am really good at IVF and have a lot of experience that maybe other people don't have at this point. And so I do really believe I have something to offer. And I find a lot of joy in those patient interactions. Like, even last night, I got a message from a patient. I don't know if you remember me, Dr. Bove, and it was like, Dr. Mello, it was like one of my toughest clinical cases ever. And I was like, thinking to myself, like, how could I forget you ever?
And ever? I don't remember you.
You're like burned into my soul. Well, she reached out. She's a 10-month-old. I haven't talked to her since she graduated from our practice, which was my former practice. That was almost 2 years ago. And she just said, I hope you're well. I saw you're not with the clinic anymore, but this is my little guy. And thank you so much for everything you did. I mean, a lot of other people gave up on her, but I didn't. And those sorts of things, I'm like, you know what? Like, I really am passionate about this work. I just might not be able to do it or want to do it at 100%, like many other people do at this point in their lives.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that again. It's okay to have medicine that you love and you don't want to do it all the time, right? We don't want that hustle life. What I'm curious too, because it does sound like you, and correct me if I'm wrong, are you on the introverted side? Are you on the sort of empath side? Because I do have a lot of people who identify that way and often sort of come into this realization that that means that they need to perhaps work differently, or perhaps they're not cut out for medicine altogether. And what I would say is that when we're tuned in to who we are and what we need, yeah, and what's our special sauce, we can give ourselves permission to do less of something that has that intensity to it, right? There's the technical aspects of fertility treatment, right, which are really important in the knowledge. But again, there's also that caring relationship of navigating through something that's emotionally challenging for people. So I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Oh, that is such a fascinating question. I'm as introverted as they come. I mean, I've learned to be an extroverted introvert because that's how we navigate the world. But I think, yeah, the definition of that split is, where do you get your energy? And 100%, mm-hmm, I get so much energy from being by myself, being in nature, going for a run, reading a book. Like, that is crucial to my existence. And so I think that I was able to not only like sort of acknowledge, but embrace the fact that I am actually a better physician when I'm, mm-hmm, able to nourish myself, when I'm able to build in yoga regularly, when I'm able to have a self-care practice that works for me, then I have more to give. I have more to give my patients. I have more to give my family. And I will tell you, it was about 6 months ago when my now 11 and a half year old, he looked at me and he said, out of the blue, "Mommy, you're back." And I was just like, that for me, and I knew it in my soul, but to hear, yeah, him say that, that they pick up on these things too. And I'm like, you know what? He's right. I am back. And I'm so grateful that I had those little bodies who could just sort of almost, yeah, kind of just be like, this isn't working for any of us. And, yeah, and it's an evolution. What works today is not necessarily what's going to work in 6 or 12 months. But, yeah, I think we have to keep calibrating, almost like we're in a yoga pose and like trying to find that space where we can hold that pose. There's some wiggling in it. But, yeah, when we can find, yeah, that true balance, I think it's better for everybody.
Yeah. Well, and talk to us a little bit about what infertility and fertility coaching looks like, because that's going to be a new concept for a lot of people as well. And I'm curious sort of how you are able to sort of blend your clinical knowledge and skills and provide care in this different way.
Yeah, that's a great question. And this is an idea that I had. I'd never even heard of anybody being a fertility coach. But when I started to be in the life coach school and I was seeing patients like all day, every day, I, mm-hmm, realized that there's some situations in the infertility journey that really lend themselves well to coaching. And it's interesting because, mm-hmm, the patients we see in the office most of the days, unless it's like a completely new patient to us, are people for whom infertility treatment has not worked. Right? It's, you've done 3 IUI cycles and you're not pregnant yet. Okay, what's the next step? Or you've done an IVF cycle, it didn't go very well. Because if things go well, they get pregnant and they graduate, right? That's the goal. But who do I see most of the days, day in and day out of practice? It's people who have gotten bad news and need to navigate what their next step is going to be. And that often comes, mm-hmm, with a lot of feelings of overwhelm, despair, hopelessness, darkness, frustration, anger. And most of my patients are professional women where it's, I'm type A. If I just work hard enough, I'm going to get my desired outcome. And the infertility journey is not like that at all. It's, yeah, there's, yeah, so many gaps in our scientific knowledge. An embryo transfer at best, it has a 60% chance. And that's with the best embryo and the best prognosis. And so there's a lot of times that people get bad news, and it's like being that Sherpa who helps people to connect with their values and figure out what that next right thing is for them. So I started this practice called Love and Science because I actually saw these onesies that said created with love and science. And I was like, that is so true. I really think it takes both. I think we can't just have the science and we can't just have the love. We need a combination of both. And so that's why I named my practice Love and Science, Thriving Through Infertility. And I thought, what's going to best support my people? And I think that one-on-one coaching for sure is the backbone of what we do. I have a curriculum now and content that goes through all different things, like how to feel feelings and how to set boundaries, mm-hmm, and how to separate fact from fiction, and like all these topics that, you know, we can all really struggle with on this journey. But 1 in 4 female physicians has infertility. So I think this is something that we need to start almost expecting, that so many of us are going to go through this. And I love creating a nurturing, supportive space where people can heal. It's like healing the healers as we try to live our lives and deal with this massive boulder. And I do groups as well. So on Friday nights, we have our group sessions. Those are really healing as well. I think there's a lot of healing that happens in community. And so, I mean, it's just beautiful. It's beautiful to see the transformations because I want people to feel good as they're undergoing this. Like I want infertility just to be a small part of someone's life. And I want to give people the tools to navigate all of it, like the ups, the downs, the unexpected, and really get to their goal of family building. So that's my passion. That's what I'm so excited about these days.
So wonderful too. I see again some parallels here of when we're navigating burnout, when we're navigating fertility challenges, what we know to do is to throw ourselves harder in, right? And work harder and toughen up, right? That's kind of the mentality. And in both of these things, what is actually needed is kind of a softening, right? It's a learning how to relax and learning how to de-stress in certain ways, right, that really support your body, because that physiology, right, if we are tight, fight and flight, kind of all up in that energy, we will not heal burnout and we will not get pregnant, right? But it's counter to what we've always done. So I think that's so wonderful to hear kind of that component of it, right? Of let's really get back in touch with feelings. And navigating that in communities, of course, is so important, right? Because infertility, as we know, is almost always a silent problem.
Yeah, people, it's isolating, it's hard. Threatening. And I think that the threat that someone wouldn't be a parent or the threat that somebody wouldn't be able to build their family, we know that patients with infertility have comparable anxiety and depression rates to patients with cancer. And some people would actually prefer a cancer diagnosis than a diagnosis of infertility. Yeah. We have that data too. So yeah. I see my goal is to support the coaching. It helps people tap into their own inner wisdom. I'm never like, this is what you need to do. But my pillars, like one of my pillars is evidence-based, because I think that people deserve the evidence-based approach. And that's something that I help people interpret all the time is is this just kind of woo and the kitchen sink protocol, or is this like actually grounded in data? Mm-hmm. So that's one great thing, as we've talked about before, is like having one foot in the clinical world and one foot in the coaching world is we're up to date on those things. And of course, compassion and empathy are really important as well, because it just, you know, we all need to be supported. And so giving ourselves a space to be supported, I think is really important.
Yeah. Oh, that's so wonderful to hear. For someone who's out there listening and they find themselves sort of struggling, you know, and resonating with parts of your story when things were really tough, what is it that you would want them to know? What do you wish that you could have known in some of your harder moments?
Oh, gosh, I think from a career perspective, I think that I would tell people that there are possibilities outside of what we can even imagine. And we think that there's this one size fits all approach. But when we tap into what we need and we verbalize that, and we know that we deserve work that works for us. We deserve a space to feel our feelings. We deserve, sometimes we think we're like unworthy and that we just need to suck it up, but that's not thriving, right? Like how can we actually thrive instead of survive? It's that we need to tap into these outside the box solutions. And there's a physician shortage right now. Like we know this. And so how can we, and it ties back to Dr. Wiley Gray's episode a few weeks ago on negotiations, is like, we deserve certain things. We are free human beings, and figuring out how we can communicate that, because there is a solution out there. Maybe it's not in our consciousness yet, but there is a way through that honors who we are and what we need.
Yeah. And I think going back to that, tapping into the intuition of also figuring out like, what is it that I might like? What lights me up in the work that I do? What do I want more of? And what do I need for myself? If I'm also an introvert and an empath and I need more time and space and less work, let me honor that for the first time.
Perhaps. That's right. And I will say, I was reading something recently about parenting too, and how it can be really hard to be a parent as an introvert because we have so much stimulation all the time. And so I think really figuring out what we need and building it into our calendars to recharge, I think it just that's something that's taken me a really long time to figure out. And I'm still figuring it out because my tendency is to overwork.
Yeah.
But I think that you're right. The intuition and just tuning in is so important, and supporting each other too, because I think this is one great thing about coaching is I think a lot of coaches have this very nuanced, can do, outside the box, like thoughts and feelings, like it's very validating to spend time with other coaches. So creating that community too has been very helpful for me.
Yeah. It's like we speak the language, right?
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a really excellent conversation. I think you've really highlighted some really important issues, and I appreciate so much you coming on and sharing your story, because the more that we talk about our stories, the more that we talk about how we navigated difficulties and when faced circumstances that are difficult and come through, I think that the more hope that people have, because so often the fear is, I'm just going to have to not be a doctor at all. Like it's a black or white decision. And we're here saying that that's just not true. So thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Mello.
Yeah. All right, my friends, thank you as always for tuning in and listening to us. And you can find Dr. Bove if you'd like to follow her. We will put links in the show notes, but if you wouldn't mind just telling people where they can find you if they're listening.
Yes. So the most comprehensive place is loveandsciencefertility.com. That's my website. If you listen today and you're struggling with infertility or somebody who would be, I do free discovery calls to see if working together would be a good fit. And I think in and of themselves, those are very valuable. I'm also on Facebook and Instagram under Love and Science Fertility. And I'd love to have you as part of my weekly newsletter too, to kind of stay up to date on what we talk about at Love and Science. So go to my website, check it out, and connect with me. I would absolutely love that.
All right. You heard the woman. So go check her out there. And until next time, take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that's our show for today. Thank you as always for listening. To learn more about my coaching programs, head to www.healthierforgood.com. And if you love this podcast, please drop us a review on iTunes or support the show by clicking the link in the show notes. Until next time, take care.